Welcome back, everyone. Today I'm speaking to Charlie Bradley of BitFuFu. I don't know much about the company, even though I've been doing this for quite a bit. So enjoy the show. I will intro the company together with Charlie now. Hello, Charlie. How are you doing?
I'm great, thanks. How are you?
Great, no complaints. I'm getting ready to travel to Vegas, as are you. I'm getting excited for the conference and excited to speak to you about BitFuFu today. Anybody that's listening, now is the time where I share the screen. We are recording at 897731, and we have currently a hash price of $56.23. And in Bitcoin terms, we're at 53,000 sats still. So, Bradley, I don't know much about BitFuFu. I've dug up a brief summary here. You help me if this is correct. You are the Vice President of Investor Relations at BitFuFu, a cloud mining and self-mining company. You have strategic backing from Bitmain, and that's mainly what you guys offer, is ASIC hosting and cloud mining alongside your self-mining, I'm assuming. You're on the NASDAQ, one of the publicly listed miners named FuFu, and you started being public in 2024 via a SPAC, if I'm not mistaken. And yeah, your customer base is largely retail through the cloud mining. And we'll get into that particularly today, because I have to admit, I never fully grasped the concept of what it really meant to do cloud mining, and people have different ideas around that, right? So yeah, but with all that being said, tell me first and foremost of that, if that was correct or not.
Yeah, I think you've got most of it. I would add that we, you know, besides the cloud mining business, which has historically been the majority of our revenue, and self-mining being the rest of it, and we do a little bit of hosting, but we also do leasing and sale of ASICs, and we recently added our own mining pool now, which we added a few months ago. And also a few months ago, we rolled out our own operating system. So it's a BitFuFu OS is the operating system to manage machines, overclocking, underclocking, things of that nature. And then the pool is BitFuFu Pool, where we started that a couple of months ago as well. So it's, the idea is to be kind of a full service provider for really anything you want to do with Bitcoin.
How vertically integrated are you? I'm assuming you're doing that to save on the margins and getting ready for all the halvings following the competition there, right? Your own firmware, own pool that takes care of some margin. How vertically integrated are you guys on the energy side?
We're, the company was originally founded late 2020, so about 4 years ago or so, as a asset light company. So all the capacity was leased capacity. Majority of the miners were leased as well. And so that was a good model to kind of get the company up and running and generate some cash flow and generate revenues. The company's been profitable every year in existence. But last October, we started to pivot and realize, we really want to be more vertically integrated. We want to own some of our own capacity. Number one, it drives down our cost basis because we're not having to pay the extra margin on to the hosting provider. And number two, it allows us to really own that capacity. So if down the future we want to pivot to HPC AI, which you're seeing, some of the miners do, it gives that optionality to us if it makes economic sense for us to do that. We're still evaluating it right now. But so we in October acquired our first site in Ethiopia, 80 megawatts. It's a joint venture. We have majority ownership there. And then we signed it was December of last year, 33 megawatts for two sites in the U.S., long-term leases with option to buy. And then most recently, two months ago, we acquired a site in Oklahoma, 51 megawatt site in Oklahoma, majority ownership joint venture there too. So right now we have about of the roughly 566 megawatts of total capacity, we control about 164 of that right now. And we've got a pipeline that we're evaluating in various stages of due diligence, about another 500 to 600 megawatts of capacity that we're looking at, potentially acquiring or building over the next, 18, 24 months.
Are you expanding in Ethiopia, or is it mainly US? Are you in any other countries currently?
Yeah, we're on five continents. So we're in the obviously in the U.S. a number of sites in the U.S. A little over half our capacity right now is U.S. based, but we also have sites in Brazil, Paraguay, Indonesia, Finland, and obviously the Ethiopia site as well. So we own that. Obviously, we have a joint venture ownership in that one site in Ethiopia. We also host, have some hosting sites as well, where we don't own the site, but we're obviously hosting, having a machines hosted there. So it's not just one site in Ethiopia. Obviously, that's a great location, right? It's crypto friendly, it's hydropower, it's cheap power. The site we own in Ethiopia is about 3.2 cents a kilowatt hour. Oklahoma is 3 cents a kilowatt hour, and the two US sites, the 33 megawatts there that we control, are about 4.2 cents a kilowatt hour, I believe. So
this episode is sponsored by Hashbranch, the easiest way to mine Bitcoin in the US. Sourcing hardware and rack space usually is a mess. Bad deal structures, misaligned incentives, and no visibility after deployment. I have placed tens of thousands of ASICs in partnership with Hashbranch. What I like most is that they cut through the noise. Fair pricing, aligned terms, and access to hosting that actually works. Use code HASHRATEUP100, visit hashbranch.com today to get $100 off of each miner that you order.
Interesting.
So, I mean, before the tariffs, right, this would have held a bit more true. My baseline, my 10-year US Treasury, with my subjective value set, I guess, would always be 4 cent mining, 4 cent power in Texas, right? Super low risk and power price, best relation there. How do you compare Ethiopia at 3.2 cents? And what was it like getting into the country? I know regulation has been very volatile as I look at the African market when it comes to mining quite closely. How did you guys find that?
You know, well, it is a joint venture. So we found a local partner there that had a site, and we acquired a majority stake in that site. So they were already operating the site. In fact, the Oklahoma site was also already on operation. So someone's been there, had the experience of doing it, knew the regulatory environment. Similar in Ethiopia, we had someone who'd been in the market for some time, obviously had the licensing required and was operating the site and knew the kind of localization there of the market. So for us, getting in there, I think that's part of the reason we went in on joint venture, right, is really to kind of reduce the risk, in fact, of going into we hadn't been to Ethiopia really before in a big way. Getting in there, owning a site, having that partnership has been very helpful for us to really understand the market.
Is that the Bitmain site? Is that public? I'm not sure. But I know Bitmain has a hydro site that's, I think, around 80 megawatts.
Yeah, the site we own is not a Bitmain site.
Okay. Talk to me about the strategic partnership with Bitmain. What brought that about? What's the origin story there?
Yeah, I mean, we have, they've been a partner for us since really the founding of the company. You mentioned at the start of the conversation that we went public March of 2024 via a de-SPAC process. Bitmain was a pre-investor on that prior to the SPAC, and then we did a pipe offering as part of the SPAC transaction, de-SPAC, and they came in and invested some additional capital on the pipe offering on that. So they, they're a good strategic partner to us. We do have a long-term hosting agreement with them, a 10-year, 300 megawatt hosting agreement. So there's probably another 8 or so years left on that. And then several months ago, we did sign a two-year framework agreement to acquire up to 80,000 ASIC miners from them, S21 series miners, at very, very, very attractive financing terms for us. So having that strategic partner, having access to those machines when we need them, as we expand out, not just the US, but globally, has been very helpful.
Understood. You guys, of course, have strategic targets that you want to reach. I think 1 gigawatt by 2026 is something that I caught. Is that accurate? And if yes, please tell me, how are you looking to achieve that besides the pipeline that you just mentioned? Are you also looking to upgrade a lot of your fleet, always getting the latest and greatest, or what are you doing to achieve that?
Yeah, I think what we said, we want to add 1 gigawatt of capacity from where we had. And I think when we said that, we were around 500 megawatts. So it puts us close to, 1.5 megawatts, 1.6 megawatts. Once we add the full, if we have another gig by the end of 2026, and a majority of that's going to be, acquire through acquisition, through M&A acquisitions, where we control the site. So that's part of the vertical integration strategy, is really to acquire more of that capacity over the next 18 or 24 months. We'll probably obviously upgrade some of the capacity that we have right now. We have the Oklahoma facility, for instance. We put about 6,000 miners in there, pre-tariff, and upgrade some of the capacity there as well. So it'll be a little bit of miners upgrading some of the mining, but the majority of it's going to be through M&A and acquiring assets.
Okay. And if you guys look at sort of outside of the US, now you said you had a half your hash rate there. Besides all the countries you mentioned, I think, Finland is probably something with heat reuse and not the largest of your sites, I would assume. Ethiopia has potential to grow. But I feel with the US and the tariffs going on, it's a bit shaky as to sort of what the newest best location is to put machines, right? Because economically, the US is just not making sense at the moment. And there's pressure to grow. So how do you handle that pressure to assume more risk maybe also? Have you looked at the UAE, for instance? Is that somewhere? Looked at Argentina, Brazil, all of these sites coming up?
We have looked at sites in the Middle East. We actually do have a site, I forgot to mention, one site in Oman, a small site. It's a couple megawatts or so. We have an office in Dubai, so we have a presence there, and it's obviously an area we're looking at as well. In terms of the U.S. market, I mean, there are assets out there that are profitable today, that have attractive electricity rates, that we that are part of that funnel that we have of 500-600 megawatts that we're looking at. So there are obviously, the economics have to make sense for us to do that. But what we're seeing is some attractive opportunities in the U.S. market at various megawatt sizes. I think we're probably not going to go anything below 20 megawatts. That'd be the absolute bottom, and the sweet spot's probably somewhere in the 50 to 100, a little over 100 megawatts is kind of the sweet spot that we'd like to get into there. There's definitely attractive assets in the U.S.
Interesting. One thing before we sort of jump into the next topic, I should probably say this. I wanted to sort of put this into three buckets, and the time that we have: vertical integration, global strategy, business models and services, financial and industry insights. Just on that first topic, maybe allow me one more question. South America, what are your thoughts and feelings around expansion there? You mentioned just now that you had a site going on in Paraguay. There's been some, again, volatile regulation over there. Seems to be a common trend at the moment. How are you guys handling that? I know there's been some other publicly traded miners doing deals back and forth on sites that they have. I saw a lot of people pulling out of Paraguay as well. That's not easy with the assets that you have there to get them out again. What are your thoughts around Paraguay currently?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're happy with the site we have there. I don't think it's a focus of expansion at the current moment. You could say the same thing about the Brazil site as well. It's one site in Brazil, it's one site in Paraguay. We don't, if I look at that the deal pipeline that we're looking at, Brazil and Paraguay really aren't present in that deal pipeline. As long as the economics continue to make sense for us, we'll keep operating those sites. But I think in terms of where we're looking at expanding, those are really not the focus right now.
Okay, understood. Switching gears a bit, Charlie, cloud mining. There are various different determinations and what's the right word? Impressions or I'm missing the right word. People understand different things when it comes to cloud mining. Yeah. Why do you how do you explain cloud mining to people versus buying hash rate or renting ASICs?
When we talk about cloud mining, what we're really doing is leasing some of our hash rate. So we have we have this hash rate. So right now it's about 28.3 exahash. We have a proprietary system that which we call Aladdin, that among other things allows us to take our hash rate capacity and allocate it dynamically between self-mining and cloud mining. And then within that cloud mining part of it, it allows us to slice it up into chunks that customers want to buy. One terahash is, I believe, the minimum purchase, but you could buy one terahash, you could buy 10, you could buy 100 terahash if you wanted to. And we sell that in in generally in time periods of 30 days. So 30, 60, 90, 180, up to 360 days. And so you go into the website and you say, I want to buy, you know, X amount of terahash for this amount of time. And then obviously at the KYC, you have to go through that process and hook in your Bitcoin wallet, your personal wallet, and then you choose a pool. We've got one, I think three or four different pools to choose from. And then you start mining. It's a pretty easy process. And that's, so it, what it does really is take away the complexity of Bitcoin mining. So if you have someone who has never done Bitcoin mining before, you know, it's a pretty easy process to get to do that. And obviously you don't have the upfront cost of acquiring a machine, worrying about the electricity costs, finding a pool. It's a pretty easy way to get started on the Bitcoin mining side.
Yeah, remember common criticism, and mine as well, has been around cloud mining is that, you know, you have no control over the hash rate. Yes, you can select the pool on the website, but who says there's really any mining going on? Who says it's not just Bitcoin sent to a wallet, right? What level of transparency is there really for me as a customer that says, hey, I want to buy hash rate? You said I can select four pools. Can I select my own worker and look at it on my pool account? How does that work?
Yeah, I mean you're not selecting the specific machine, but once it gets hooked into a machine or machines, you're able to view that in real time, either on the website or on the app itself. And so you can see there is a physical machine that is mining Bitcoin into your wallet, and that's one of the things it's important to us is the transparency. I mean, obviously we're a publicly traded company, so we're regulated, so that's important to us. But even prior to being public, one of the founding principle of the company was to make the cloud mining really transparent, right? Because certainly, there's been some cloud mining operations that got a bad rap, right? And you didn't know, as you mentioned, you didn't really know what you're getting. And that's one of the, I think that really the things that distinguishes BitFuFu is that absolute transparency, and the uptime, right? We guarantee 95% uptime. We actually run higher than that, but that's the guarantee to the customer. So, that's the key focus for us.
If I'm not buying, if I'm buying 10 terahash, for instance, right? Or I'm buying one of the sizes that you just mentioned, then I'm not buying hash rate from one specific machine. There was a startup called Reactor XYZ, who I interviewed last year sometime. I think they've shut it down for now. But it was similar, right? They had a pool of hash rate from a public miner, and they were resetting that to institutional and retail buyers. And they basically took out a bucket of the hash rate pool and sent it on and split it up. And then you don't have the machine specific risk, right? So that's one of the key advantages, is that your hash rate doesn't rely on a singular machine, right? It comes from thousands of machines, and there's a low, very, very low chance that all of them go down at the same time. Is that the same case here, or am I misunderstanding it?
And there's some similarities there. I mean, it is, we are allocating that hash rate into cloud, and then you're buying the amount you want to purchase there. But when you're, when the Bitcoin gets mined and it goes in from the pool, it doesn't go from the pool to BitFuFu and then to your wallet. It goes from the pool to your wallet directly. So we're not kind of in the intermediary right there. Once the transaction of selling that hash rate is done and that contract is set, we're not really participating in that other than obviously maintaining the infrastructure to mine. And one of the reasons we can guarantee that 95% uptime is because we have this fleet on five continents, and we had our ability to allocate hash rate between self mining and cloud. So if we had even an entire data center go down, we would just dynamically on the fly move the slider to cloud and make up that whatever was missing from that cloud. So the customer is not even going to notice that. So it would obviously take it away from our self-mining side of it. Not ideal, but the idea is to make sure the customer is going to remain whole. And that's hugely important to us. And so that's, that allows us to, this Aladdin system and our ability to do that and manage that in real time. And we're looking at every machine in real time on a 24-hour basis. We've got a team in Singapore that makes sure that they monitor that. If one machine goes down or even a site goes down, it's going to be taken care of pretty quickly.
Who is your buyer, your average buyer for this? Is it more retail or more institutional clients?
From a number, we have over 600 and 12,000 registered users on the cloud mining platform. Now, they don't obviously all 600,000 plus mine at the exact same time. From a number standpoint of those registered users, the majority of the accounts are retail accounts. But from a revenue standpoint, the majority of our cloud mining revenue is institutional revenue, because the institutional order sizes tend to be multiple times higher than your average retail size.
Okay. And how do you price it? What's the mechanism behind pricing the hash rate for the open market?
Yeah, I mean, that's a little bit of the secret sauce. I mean, obviously, it's an algorithm that goes into it. We've got a team that is paying attention to difficulty rate and hash price and a number of other factors and adjusting that cost of the terahash. So when you're, as a customer, what you're buying is you're paying per terahash per day fee. And then there's a service fee actually on top of that as well to cover the maintenance and the depreciation of the miner. So there's kind of a two split fee there. But the cost of, what we sell that terahash for, there's obviously an algorithm that goes into calculating that, which, I'm not going to obviously get into that for competitive reasons, but
that's unfortunate. It gets,
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's the secret sauce, right?
No, I hear you. Yeah, no, that's totally understandable. In my mind, how much did you say you do cloud mining versus self mining and hosted mining?
If you look at 2023 and certainly through the first 9 months of 2024, it was a little over 60% of total revenues was cloud mining. Okay. We had about 1 or 2% that was hosting and leasing of miners. In Q4 of 24, we did have about $30 million of miner sales, which we had not sold any miners prior to the fourth quarter of 24 in 24, and we had not sold any in 2023. So 2022 is the last time we had actually done mining sales. But obviously the demand came back, we had access to these miners. Part of that is a customer service standpoint. We had customers that are cloud mining with us, are hosting with us, wanted to acquire miners, and we had the opportunity to take care of that customer. So that was the reason for that. I think you'll probably see us continue to do some mining sales into 2025. So that 60% cloud probably gets taken down a little bit, but it's still going to be, a majority of the revenues of the company.
HashRedUp is sponsored by solomining.de, the place to buy open source home and solo mining devices like the BitX. With about 20 watts of usage, these solo mining devices are perfect to play the lottery from home or from the office. Get 5% off with the code HashRedUp. Thanks to the legends at solomining.de for sponsoring the content. So explain to me, is cloud mining what sets BitFuFu apart? Is that why people invest in the company? Is that why it makes up such a large chunk? Because, originally I would say, okay, it makes more sense to, as a miner, mine the Bitcoin and hold on to it, right? Increase that treasury. And then when you have expansion plans, which is what most miners do, is sell more of the hash rates, increase the cloud mining aspect of things to sell your hash rate forward, basically to have that cash flow to build a new site or invest in a new site. Is that a consideration? Why is it 60%? That seems like a lot.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a financial tool for us, right? Because when we're selling that hash rate, we're locking it in that contract for the contract length, and so that allows us to reduce some of the volatility of our revenue stream and our cash flow stream over an entire mining cycle, whether mining is Bitcoin's going up or it's going down. I think that's one of the reasons the company's been profitable every year in existence. So its revenue grows, EBITDA grows. And net income grows. And part of that reason is because we can manage the dynamics of the profitability of the company because we have this cloud mining piece and our ability to slide it back and forth. So if Bitcoin price, in general terms, if Bitcoin price is low, we want to slide more to self-mining. And if Bitcoin price is at a high level getting what we internally determine would be close to a peak level, we'll allocate more on the cloud side because obviously that terahash price that we're selling it for reflects the higher market dynamics. And we're locking that revenue stream in, which obviously we get that when the contract's signed, we get paid for the contract immediately. So from a cash flow perspective, it's very cash flow positive. It allows us to redeploy that income into the other growth opportunities of the company.
And how do you handle regulation around it? Because essentially, are you selling a futures contract? Are you regulated in the US by the CME, I guess it is?
Yeah, we actually don't sell any of the cloud mining services in the US currently. It's oh, something okay. I think we will be doing. It's something we've been actively looking at that. And the reason is we're not doing it currently is because of the regulatory environment. And it's obviously, up until relatively recently, been a bit of a uncertain regulatory environment for Bitcoin mining and crypto in general. And I think obviously the market has gotten a bit better for that from a regulatory and a governmental standpoint. But we're still looking to make sure we, you know, because we are a publicly traded company, obviously making sure we get those regulations in place and we're doing the right thing and not breaking a rule. Obviously, that's the reason we're not selling in the U.S. So right now, all that growth is come without even being in the U.S. market. And I think that once we're able to tap in the U.S. market, that's sort of another leg of growth for us.
So where's the current customer based? The average customer?
Majority of customers would be Asia, Africa, and then European customers would be third.
Interesting. Do you know their reasoning for buying hash rate futures, essentially, and not investing in miners directly? Like, why do they choose to do that? Is there any special financial goal that they reach by doing it, or is it just a pure, I want exposure to Bitcoin mining investment?
Yeah, and I know we don't really look at it as a futures contract. I think that's something, you know, really entirely different. Where you're buying, if anything, you're buying Terahash as a spot rate. Right? You're buying it immediately because you're paying for whatever the cost is at that contract, whether for 30, 60, 90, whatever, how many days you can do the contract. So, in our view, it's really not a futures type of product. The reason people do that is, number one, we've got some the institutional customers, which include, there's some hedge funds in there, there's some family offices, there's some high net worth folks in there who want to be involved in Bitcoin mining, but don't want to deal with all the complexity of having to go out and acquire the miners, make sure the miners are maintained, find the pool, find the right electricity source. But they want to be involved in Bitcoin mining and they want to participate in that. The next question would be, well, why don't they just buy it off an exchange and own Bitcoin? And the reason we do that cloud mining is we've looked at this, we've studied it, and we looked at the customers' contracts over time. And what we've found is that from cloud mining versus buying an exchange, the customers end up owning more Bitcoin, and it varies depending on where you are in the cycle and the pricing, but it's varied anywhere from 2% to 20% versus buying it on the exchange. That's the simple answer to it, as to why not just buy it on exchange and hold it.
Yeah. I mean, you tell me if that's a big factor, but if your customers are from Africa, Asia, maybe less Asia, but certainly Africa, these folks might only have access to exchanges where liquidity is very, very, slim or volumes are not very high. And if you're a big enough buyer, you end up moving the price against yourself. And OTC often is also not liquid and fees are high. And this is a way to acquire Bitcoin and average into Bitcoin without the market really getting much of a wind of your purchase, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right, too. We have some institutional customers that will ladder out the duration of their contracts over certain terms, depending on what their view on the market is personally. So that's exactly right. And on the retail side, it's a way of dollar cost averaging down on Bitcoin as well by doing the mining. And we've had some miners who were mining had their own farms or their own machines. After the halving, those machines aren't as profitable, or in many instances, not profitable for a very small miner. And so their choice is to either recapitalize their fleet and put a lot of money back into their business, or get out of the business. And we've seen some choose to say, I don't want to put the capital up, I want to get out of the business. But obviously, it's Bitcoin's kind of in their blood, right? They've been doing it for several years, and they love it, and they want to be a part of it. And we've had some of those customers actually become cloud mining customers because they want to still be involved in Bitcoin. Obviously, they're believers in the long term value of it.
Hmm. Last question on the cloud mining side, Charlie. How do you see competition? Because there's Blockstream Mining Node, there's Hashrate Index or Lux is selling futures. You guys are doing the cloud mining. There's startups like Omnis who are doing it. I know Power just acquired Blockgreen, a Swiss-based, also looking at futures in a different way. How do you keep setting yourself apart there? And maybe do you look at slimming margins in the future? Do you model that at all with seeing all the competition, or is it really not a threat at the moment?
Yeah, we haven't really seen any threat. If you look at the growth rate of our user base, we went from around a little over 300,000, I think a little over a year ago, to 600,000 plus today. So we've seen pretty phenomenal growth on that, despite everything that's been going on in the market and, other, and from a competitive standpoint. We are the number one provider of cloud mining services in the world. We have a number one market share in that. And the reason for that, I think, is, and what's different is because we are a regulated company being public, and we do have this guaranteed operate, we have a fleet that's, global, literally five continents. I mean, that allows us to really have a stable fleet, and give, I think, some comfort level to the customer that, these are physical machines on physical sites, that have a guaranteed uptime of 95%+, and this full transparency, as we talked about earlier. And I think that makes the big difference, is that transparency, the fact that you're going to be up and running those machines and mining at least 95% of the time. And generally, it's we run closer to 98%, quite frankly, out of the whole fleet. That's a differentiating point for us. And the fact that we've got that installed base, I think, is a competitive advantage for us.
So I lied. That was the last question. If you are so geographically diversified, what is the biggest risk in not being or in offering this product to you, do you think?
For a risk from a BitFuFu company perspective?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, it's really probably more macro risk, right? I mean, what happens to the price of Bitcoin if you're not a believer that it's going to be higher over time, then you wouldn't want to be involved in the business. Obviously, that's not our position. That's not our customer's position. So I think, from a U.S. standpoint, obviously the regulatory environment is probably really outside the U.S. regulatory environment, what goes on with that is probably, if I want to say it's a risk, that's the biggest risk that we would look at. But, when we go into an area, we choose very carefully on where we're going to go and what the regulatory climate is going to be like, obviously, and obviously the electricity cost is going to be like, and has to have a certain ROI, or we're not going to do the project. So I think, the company tends to be a bit cautious on venturing into kind of a new space. That's, you look at the joint venture we've done, right? We had never operated a site, our own site before. And rather than just going out buying a site and kind of doing it and see what happens, we partnered with someone who knew what they were doing, has been doing it for a while, and we can kind of, learn the ropes and understand the mechanics and the metrics and what goes on there. So I think we tend to be, conservative in deploying the capital to making sure the return's going to be there for us.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you always have a fallback, right? If the customer base in cloud mining disappears, it's not like your hash rate becomes useless. Right. You just immediately self mine with anything that's left over, I guess. That leads us a bit into sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, the demand for cloud mining around continues to be very, very strong. I mean, I think if we wanted to, we could probably sell 100% of our hash rate to cloud if we wanted to. But we obviously want to retain a good piece of that for self mining, because we think the long-term value of Bitcoin is going to be much higher than where it is today.
Yeah, I mean, you could always argue that with the profits, you could go buy Bitcoin. You'd essentially be mining more Bitcoin that way than you could on your own, right? Leads us a bit into financial and industry insight, Charlie. Do you know what BitFuFu's hash cost is? What's your break even?
Our cost to mine a Bitcoin across the entire fleet, and obviously the majority of that is hosted capacity right now, is around 63,000 a Bitcoin on a fully loaded cost basis, including DNA. When our site in Oklahoma before DNA is 18,000. Again, that's a 3 cents electricity cost, 3 cents a kilowatt hour. So, obviously a lot of the site's capacity that we have right now, we're still leasing that capacity. So obviously the cost structure is a bit different than it is if you own it yourself. And that's, I think as we go more vertically integrated, we acquire more sites, you'll see our overall cost basis tick down.
And do you know, sorry, I don't know what 62 translates to. Do you know what the petahash cost is to produce a petahash a day?
I don't know if we've ever, I don't think we've ever disclosed it in those terms. Right. We've just talked in terms of cost per Bitcoin.
Okay, understood. All right. What happens? What goes first if price falls below 62 tomorrow? What do you guys do? How do you manage your treasury if that happens in the eventual downturn?
Yeah, I think we obviously would continue to mine Bitcoin. We'd obviously allocate the machines. You know, machines are not same profitability across the entire network. Again, you know, that the site in Oklahoma, 18,000, right? So, you know, worst case scenario, we had Bitcoin price going below. You know, if we thought it was going to stay below, we'd power down, probably power down some miners, take some offline temporarily, or underclock them. And, you know, again, we monitor this in real time as to what the profitability of per each machine is going to be. So, you know, I think if our view is a pretty bullish view on the long term value of Bitcoin. And I think you know, our cost basis is going to continue to come down. If you look at where cost basis was a year ago, it was certainly higher than 62,000 a Bitcoin 12 months ago. And that's come down as we've acquired more sites. So I think that's kind of how we manage it on a short-term basis. If that were to happen, we'd go below our break-even cost. We just we take some stuff offline until you know the price came back into equilibrium again.
Are you still selling your hard-mined Bitcoin for expenses like mining hardware, electricity bills, and tax invoices? With Firefish, you can access liquidity in fiat or stablecoins without selling your Bitcoin. Firefish is a peer-to-peer marketplace for non-custodial, Bitcoin-backed loans. No credit checks and no monthly payments. Sign up on Firefish today, create a loan request, deposit BTC into a multisig, get funded by an investor, and repay at the end of the term. Collateral is always at least 2x the loan. So if BTC drops by 50%, you may be liquidated. So be sure at any time to top up the collateral as needed. Thanks to the legends at Firefish for sponsoring the show. Use HashRateUp for a 30% discount on the fees and get your first Bitcoin-backed loan today. It also loops back to the beginning of the conversation, right? Where you talked about vertical integration and making sure that you shave off as much as possible on the margins that you pay others in firmware and pool. Any plans to own your own energy facilities? I know, I think BitTier has recently announced they bought a whole power plant.
Yeah, I wouldn't say there's anything imminent. I think we certainly looked at that. We've had people come to us with different proposals. I'm not going to rule it out. You know, right now we're really looking at focus on acquiring just the existing sites that have contracts, power established contracts already, in place. And just, you know, just back on that last point of you know, on the Bitcoin break-even price, you know, that's the nice thing about having this cloud mining business is we could also sell more into cloud, right? And the demand for that cloud mining business. And so I think that would probably mitigate some of the downside risk to being a pure self miner is that we do have pretty strong demand from retail institutional to buy the terahash rate. And we've seen even, demand when Bitcoin was trading, well below where it is today. And so that's, again, that's why if you look at the stability of the revenue stream and the stability of the profits of this company, a big part of that is because we have this cloud mining business that we're not, really subject nearly as to the whims of the Bitcoin price as a pure Bitcoin miner would be. And that's a key difference in the company, I think.
Do you feel like the shareholder base and investors accurately price BitFuFu? I'm not sure if you are legally allowed to comment on price. But what I'm trying to understand is, do you think that people understand the value add of BitFuFu currently compared to the competition? I mean, you guys are the only ones that do the cloud mining thing.
Yeah, I don't think it's fully appreciated by the market or by the investment community. If you look at our metrics on evaluation on any kind of metric that you want to calculate, whether it's revenues or megawatts or exahash, we are, and you look at the public company peer group, and that we are well below the average multiple of the peer group on every single metric. I've yet to find a metric where we are at or above the average multiple. So we think there's a lot of opportunity for the upside once I think investors really understand the story and hear the story. That's, you know, that's part of what we're doing, things like this, having the podcast and getting the word out there to folks. We've only been public a little over a year. I think that's part of it. And I think as more people come to learn the story, you know, we've seen a pretty strong pickup in our trading volume over the past 2, 3, 4 months. And I think that's part of that is the fact that we've been getting the word out and talking to people and telling the story. And I think as people hear that story, it does resonate with folks.
Anything that you wish I had asked or touched on, Charlie, that you wanted to share?
No, I think we covered pretty much the gamut of the business and what makes us different. I would say, you know, one of the things we think we're really good at is managing that network, right? When, you know, it's 28.3 exahash on 5 continents. The ability and the know-how to manage that entire fleet in real time is we think, you know, one of our competitive advantages. And we have a team in place that that manages that on a real-time basis. And I think that that's not something everyone can do. You know, we don't just put an ASIC miner and put a mining rig in a site and then flip the switch and turn it on, right? That machine is monitored. It's overclocked. It's underclocked. It is managed to be optimized to the highest degree possible, and make sure we're squeezing the most out of all those machines. And I think that not everyone is great at doing that, and we think we're pretty good at it.
What are you using to manage the fleet? Is that also proprietary software? Miner management?
It is. We call it Aladdin. That's our internal system. Same. Mm-hmm. It's it is IP protected. So it is, and it is a proprietary system that we have.
Okay, but it is not just for the cloud mining side of things. It also talks to the machines and tells you temperatures and all of that good stuff.
Yeah, it's not just slicing the hash rate in between self and cloud. It's also it's obviously protecting the machines from any kind of intrusion. It's looking at the optimization of the machines. So it's doing a variety. There's sort of 3 or 4 different pieces to it that do different parts of the operation. So it's a pretty robust system. And we're, you know, as far as capacity of the machine, we're nowhere near the possible capacity of what the Aladdin system can handle. We could, you know, it's multitudes higher than where we are today. So we've got plenty of space to go on that to add into that fleet.
Very nice. Last but not least, before you share where people can find more about Bifufu, Charlie, is there any other African nation besides Ethiopia in your deal pipeline at the moment?
Yeah, I don't want to get into specifics on the deal pipeline. I think, you know, I would say that when we're targeting new areas to go into, it's the two big pieces are electricity cost and regulatory environment. And it has to, if it doesn't clear those two hurdles, then the conversation kind of stops. So we're obviously, you know, we're going to go in, that's going to be the decision process that we start off on. And so there could potentially be other areas, but it's got to be a stable environment. As I said, the company tends to be a bit conservative on going into new areas. And I think that's, you know, that's probably how we're going to manage it going forward as well.
If you had to describe your perfect site, what would that look like? Minimum size, electricity price, uptime?
Free also, electricity, up 100% uptime with free electricity. Right. Obviously, but joking aside, you know, I think for a sweet spot, you know, 50 to 100 megawatts, maybe 150 megawatts. We don't have a site. We obviously don't own a site that big right now. We have 80 megawatts is the largest site we have. But and electricity costs, you know, when we're looking at sites, we're looking at really 4 cents or sub 4 cents a kilowatt hour. That really, you know, to make economic sense, unless there's something, you know, unusual or unique about it, that generally has to be kind of the hurdle rate we're going at. Obviously, we've done some pilot projects with flared gas, you know, small pilot projects that we still continue to look at that. And obviously, that's, you know, essentially almost free power, right? You take the flared gas, you put in some power gen sets and you use those to power the miners off grid. That's, you know, that's an interesting scenario for us. What we're looking at is really what's the stability of that flared gas. It's not always the flared gas doesn't always come out at the same rate at the same time, and so you've got to have some backup power to make sure those miners are going to stay online. And so that's, you know, one of the issues we're looking at is when you factor in that backup power, what is your cost to do that? What is the cost really to do that? And so, but I think it's an attractive opportunity that allows us to take some of the older miners, maybe that's older than 19, it's not as profitable, put those into a potentially a flared gas system or something off grid, and kind of extend the life out of those miners.
Yeah, you brought up two more thoughts. I always feel like with flared gas or gas in general, you're just shifting some of the power price over to the CapEx side. So you're paying for a lot of the power upfront almost. Does that work for you because you're a publicly listed company? How do you think about that? What's sort of the CapEx when you look at a site? What are you willing to put on the table there per megawatt? What is acceptable? What makes sense?
Yeah, I mean, what we've looked at really are our partnership opportunities where we will supply equipment and they will take a profit share off of that. So we're not investing in the capital of the to take the flared gas and pipe it into some gensets or buying the gensets and everything else. Where we'll say we'll go in there, we'll supply some machines, we'll take a percent profit off of the production of those machines, and then the operator that we're partnered up with will then take care of pretty much everything else. And so for us, it's a very low capital intensive business other than just having the miners to supply. And it's a very low risk from our standpoint in terms of a cost standpoint of what that's going to cost the company, because it's a pure profit share play for us. So again, these are pilot projects. It's not something we're doing in a big way today. I'd say it's immaterial to the revenue stream today, but just it's something that we think about as we look down the road. How does the profitability of Bitcoin mining look 3.5 years from now at the next halving, right? It's going to be different than it is today, obviously. And so we're preparing to be in an optimal position when that does happen.
Absolutely. I will spare the second thought for next time. Maybe we can then also talk about AI once you guys made your mind up. We don't have time for that today. But Charlie, it was great having you. Thank you for the time. I know it's always scarce. So thank you for coming on. I'll see you in Vegas next week.
Yeah, thanks for having us on. Looking forward to seeing you in Vegas next week as well.
Guys, please have a look at the show notes. Send me any questions, thumbs up, subscriptions. You know how that works. Look at the show notes for BitFuFu links. Again, thank you, Charlie, for coming on. And yeah, have a good day. Thank you.
Thanks, you too.